HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 163, recorded live Tuesday, May 26th, 2009. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. And by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Patrick Smakia, lead developer at N-Depend.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. And I'm making an international call today, talking to Patrick Smakia in France. We're talking about software metrics. Patrick is the lead developer at N-Depend. Thanks so much, Patrick, for being flexible with me and talking across time zones today.
You're welcome, sir.
So I wanted to talk to you about software metrics because I'm a big fan of N-Depend and a lot of the different metrics that N-Depend provides to measure quality and measure coupling and all the different things about software that people don't measure. And I knew that you would be the best guy to talk to because I think for a lot of people, lines of code is the metric that they start with and often the metric that they end with. Is lines of code a useful metric?
Yeah, actually, line of code is a representative code metric because we are all working with files, and you can measure the line of code in file. So everybody is thinking in terms of line of code and maybe number of files also. But I just would like to make a point here about physical versus logical line of code, because if you just counting the number of line of code inside your file, which is a lot of guys I think are doing that. I'm not sure it's a really relevant metric because it can be biased by the language, it can be biased by the code style, the commenting. There is a lot of things coming inside this deal. So what the tools are doing, like N-Depend or Visual Studio, usually they are counting line of code with what we call PDB sequence point. Basically a sequence point. Every developer, .NET developer, know what is a sequence point. It's when you are debugging your code. You just hit F9, okay, to put a breakpoint, and what is underlined by your F9 is a sequence point, okay? And by counting the sequence point, we can say that the sequence point is a line of executable code, okay? And so we can say that the line of code can be counted with sequence point. I just wanted to make this clear because like this, we have a metric that is language independent, like whether you're doing VB.NET or C-sharp or F-sharp or any other language. You have a metric that can be comparable across language. It's also independent from the code style, and you don't get comment inside the metric also. So it's a perfect metric. It's a logical metric of line of code.
Okay, so let me see if I understand this, though. So I want to make sure that I've understood what you said. You're saying that when you just count the lines of code, when we do these simple line of code counters that we all have done in, you know, computer science 101, and the teacher says, we're going to build a program to count lines, sometimes we'll put in simple checks for avoiding things like counting a curly brace as a line of code. That would be physical lines of code. You're saying that the sequence points, this is based on the PDB file. This is based on is the PDB file required to count these sequence points?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. The sequence points are defined inside the PDB, and usually they are used by the debugger for the debugging experience to link the IL code with the source code. But what most of the .NET tool, whether you are thinking of N-Depend, N-Cover, most of the .NET tool are working actually sequence points in a way or another. And usually when you are counting the number of line of code, you are using the sequence points from PDB. And Visual Studio also is counting the, yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so if you can step over it, then you can count it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Now, in Steve McConnell's book on software estimation, he says that lines of code really is an efficient way to compare applications, only applications that are developed within the same context. I mean, can I compare an Iron Python application and a C-sharp application with lines of code and get any meaningful result?
Yeah, I think that's interesting to use line of code for comparing. a lot of developers dislike Llanos code because they see it as a yardstick to measure productivity. And I don't think it's relevant to measure productivity because more line of code, we all know that by copy-paste code, we can have more line of code and it's a really bad thing. So line of code doesn't measure productivity, but it's still very useful indeed, as Steve McConnell said, that to compare code base. Because, for example, I just have a few numbers here to give. Like the .NET framework with this definition has around 2 million line of code. Okay, like ReSharper have 500,000 line of code. And Pen are 80,000 and Hibernate has 35,000. Okay. Pen.net has 45,000 and the list is very long. And now you see that with this number, if I'm talking like this, you can say that first, wow, the .NET framework is really a big, big, big piece of code. And you can compare it to other tool or the software that you know. What's interesting is that you can measure your own software and like compare your effort in your software compared with other effort that you think you know about.
Ah, I think the thing that surprised me there was that ReSharper was 500,000 lines of code, but that's probably a topic for another day.
I'm not working at ReSharper, but I think they have a lot of generated code because, you know, it's compiler related. And usually when you develop compiler, you generate tons of code. So I think ReSharper have a lot of generated code. But it's also interesting to use line of code inside your code base to compare feature implementation. Okay, like we know that on the feature A, we have like 2,000 line of code, and feature B, we have 4,000. And then maybe you can assess for the future feature C, you can assess the number of line of code, and maybe you can have a good estimation of the time you're going to spend on this feature.
Now, line of code, though, as a metric, doesn't measure quality, it measures quantity. So it's just one metric of, I assume, several dozen metrics that we might want to use. What are some metrics that I can use to really point at some code and it tells me whether this is good code or not?
First line of code can be used for quality, right? Like if you have a very big method, usually a method with more than, let's say, 20 line of code, it begins to be really hard to understand. Okay. So for code quality, for maintenance, line of code can be used at the method level and I would say even at the type level. But, what's really interesting with line of code is that it's related to another very popular metric, which is the ratio of code covered by test. And, whether you are using in the .NET world ncover or whether you are using Visual Studio for coverage. Okay. Mm-hmm. Both tools are relying on PDB sequence points actually as line of code. And the percentage you get with these tools are actually percentage of line of code. So these two metrics are pretty related. And, in my opinion, the ratio of code covered by test is the most important metric you can have because it's not related really to maintenance. Of course, you can detect a regression test, but it's also relative to correctness, which is very important. Correctness is really the Saint Graal of every developer. And the more your code is covered and you can be sure, the more likely you have a few bugs in it.
So the ratio of lines of code covered by tests can tell me whether or not that code is going to run as I expect it to. It'll tell me that it's correct. Does it really measure code quality? I mean, I could write bad code and have great coverage. I guess good or bad is usually subjective, like beauty is a subjective thing. Is there a more concrete metric I can use to decide whether code is well written or not?
Concerned to quality, you have some other metrics and more or less we all know about it. So there is one very important metric which is named cyclomatic complexity. So basically the definition is the number of paths a thread can take in a method. So it's a metric defined for method, a concrete method with a body. But more concretely, cyclomatic complexity is the number of for, if, else, switch, case, etc. statements you have in the body of your method. And indeed, with this metric coupled with the number of line of code, you can have a pretty clear idea of a method that won't be maintainable in the future anyway. So you have also another border of this metric, which is the nesting depth, which is the deepest encapsulated scopes inside the body of the method. Okay. And so you can define this metric to see really where the big fat method that are real pain to maintain and to develop. And of course, you have a lot of guys like number of parameters, number of variables, number of overloads for method, etc. So all these metrics, which are the definition is pretty obvious from a developer point of view, all these metrics can be used with a threshold, and it's very easy. You just fix your threshold like threshold applicable in a real world. Like for example, I don't want more than 10 for complexity of a method or more than 20 line of code. And then in your CI, in your continuous integration process, you can see immediately if you have new guys that are pretty bad, not respecting this threshold.
Okay, so if I have lines of code in my toolbox, I have cyclomatic complexity, and I have the percentage of code covered by tests, I can get a good sense of whether or not my code is objectively good code. I can tell whether or not it's going to run as I wish. But when I start looking at specific functions, and I say this function is too complicated, and I break it up into pieces, the complexity of the business problem is still there. I've just made it into bite-sized chunks. So I might be able to look at my application and say, this is no longer complex from a method perspective, but the software itself, the way that the software fits together, the way that it couples with other bits of code, may indicate other problems, don't you think?
Yeah, I completely agree with you, because actually we are talking about two kinds of complexity. The first one you're talking about is relative to your software. It's relative to the domain of your software. And at a point, you will reach a point where the complexity of the software you're developing cannot be smaller than what it is now. But by having very big method, very fat tip, by having all these very bad things, then you are fabricating even more complexity. So here, the goal here is to reduce the fabricated complexity to finally just keep the essential complexity that you will have anyway, because if you are doing professional software, it is complex anyway. So this is, there is really two kind of complexity, and there is one you cannot really reduce, but the other one, there is tool and there are metrics to try to reduce this one.
I've used Ndepend over the years, and we used it at Carilion Check Free, the banking company that I worked at. And I always found that it took me a while to get my brain around the way that it displays the information. It can be a little overwhelming when you try to present such a large amount of information over a very, very large,
project
library. I always show people the .NET framework, you know, thousands of types. And it almost feels like I don't have enough pixels on the screen to present this. What is the name of the view that you use to show this? It's kind of like a grid, and then there's colors and numbers within the grid, and you can drill in and out. What is that called that you're using?
So basically, what we've done in the tool Ndepend is that we have several panels, and say we try to provide several views on your code, whether is it about dependency or whether is it about metrics or evolution. But when it comes to metrics, the view you are talking about is named a tree map. Okay, and basically a tree map is just a view, so it's a rectangle. You have your panel defined as a rectangle. So this rectangle has a width and a height, and it defines a surface. Okay, and the idea is that this entire surface be split it up with code element metric value. So for example, if you are looking at a number of line of code of type inside your library or inside the .NET framework, for example, we can say that like there is like 2 million line of code. We can say that the surface of the panel is actually 2 million line of code. And then what we want to do is to represent each class inside the .NET framework with a surface proportional to the number of line of code of the concerned class. Okay? So basically, you'll get a rectangle and a lot of sub-rectangle inside this rectangle. And the big sub-rectangle will be actually the big type.
Hi, it's Scott here from Another Place in Time. I hope you're enjoying the show so far.
I apologize for interrupting it, but I wanted to let you know that assembling a podcast like this every week isn't free. Certainly the bandwidth bill crushes us every month, so I want to let you know that this show is sponsored by Telerik. They make the show possible, and they make some pretty cool products as well. For example, if you're trying to build a Web 2.0 Ajaxy application, trying to use the Web 1.0 components, it's kind of difficult. You got to get the next-gen stuff if you want to build the next-gen websites, and that's exactly what the folks at Telerik have got in their new upcoming product, which is codenamed Rad Controls Prometheus. It's a big pack of web controls built entirely on top of the Microsoft ASP.NET Ajax stuff that you already understand. It's going to give you a lot of performance and interactivity on your next project. They mirror the ASP.NET Ajax API, so the development's really straightforward. Client scripts are shared, loading time is pretty fast. You set a couple of properties, you can even bind to web services for a really efficient operation. The new RAD editor for ASP.NET Ajax loads up to 4 times faster than before, and the RAD grid will do thousands of records in milliseconds. But of course, it's better to try these things for yourself, so you can visit telerik.com/ASP.NET Ajax and download a trial. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll get right back to the show. Okay, so the size of the rectangle is something I can choose. I can say that this rectangle is going to be large because of lines of code or because of some other metric.
Exactly.
So the size of the rectangle is another axis in my graph that I'm trying to make multi-dimensional data appear in 2 dimensions.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly that. And what's interesting also with the tree map view is that the metric that are the class that are related, like for example classes inside the same namespace, will be placed close on the, that will be located near inside the tree map. So you can see that this namespace is big, this assembly is big, or this one is very small. So not only gives you a size for method type, but also for namespace and assembly. So you can see the whole structure of the code base in terms of the metric you have chosen, and here it's the number of line of code.
And then because of the grouping, I can group, things are grouped by namespace and by assembly. I could look at something kind of, I could back away from my large monitor and I could tell whether one assembly is a problem based on the complexity that appears in one assembly versus another. I could probably use this also to measure the complexity of open source applications that I bring in, libraries that may feel good, but when I look at the numbers, they might be trouble in the future.
Yeah, this is another application of this kind of tool for measuring quality. It's good to measure your own quality, but for example, when you are buying a library or when you order someone to do library for you, it's interesting to have minimal metrics to abide by inside this framework. Like that, you can be not really sure that the quality will be here, but at least you can assess a minimal quality. So I think this is a new kind of way to see the relation between the different actors inside the software development, because now you can say, hey, I want this minimum of quality. Like in any other industry, when you are ordering a building or a villa or a house, anything, you want a minimum quality and it's visible with eyes. And with this kind of tool, now you can do it also in software.
Right, yeah. The ability to be able to stop a build because of something being wrong has always been important to me when I'm doing CI, when I'm doing continuous integration. Being able to say that the build has failed because of some syntax error is really step zero. Being able to stop the build and declare that the build is bad because of a test failure is important. But the idea that you could stop a test based on a design flaw, I always thought was a cool idea, that I could say, this is just too complex for any human to understand, and I'm going to stop the build, and perhaps I could put in an exception.
Yeah, but Scott, I have a caveat about here is that now more and more, and with T4 upcoming actually, more and more we have a lot of generated code, okay? And actually just today I listened to your show with Kathleen Dollars about code generation, and one question was about the quality of generated code. And what we can see is that very often the quality of the code generated is not here, because this code actually won't have in the future to be understood by the human. It's not really a good thing, but when tools are analyzing code, at first it doesn't make the difference between generated and human handcrafted code, right? So sure. You don't want to maybe to follow metrics too much about that. So for example, in NDPEN, we are providing some facility, like you can use some regular expression or you can require that type outside of this assembly, won't be inspected or things like that. But still you have this generated code. Maybe you don't really want to hear about inside your report. So this is a good thing to stop the build, to fail the build because of quality. But you have to make sure first that you have unlocked this potential problem.
Right. It sounds like I'll have a lot of exceptions, definitely. Now, lines of code are still pretty basic. We're kind of moving from the basic metrics to the more complex. I think that everyone has used lines of code at some point. People, as they start getting into test-driven development and respecting their tests, they start caring about code coverage. The things that I think are the most interesting metrics are the ones that I'm afraid use a lot of math and they use a lot of charts and graphs to explain. And the one that I found the most useful when I was working in the banking industry was this notion of afferent and efferent coupling. Afferent AFF yes. and efferent EFF. And I think they're really horribly named because I can't quite keep them straight. And the idea is that who is using me and what am I using? Is that a fair
exactly,
way to put
yeah.
it? And how do I keep them? How do I keep track of which one's afferent coupling and which one's efferent?
Yeah. So these two metrics actually, they are related to something very popular for every architect, which is everybody's nowadays, and this is a good thing. Everybody said, I want low coupling and I want high cohesion inside my code. And what's interesting is that we have metric for that. So metric concerning coupling, as you said, they are incoming and outgoing, or afferent and efferent coupling. Okay, and this metric can be very interesting because, for example, let's take the efferent coupling. What does it mean if you have a high efferent coupling, let's say for a class? A high efferent coupling, it means that you have a class that is using a lot of the class.
So efferent coupling means I have a lot of outgoing references. I'm using a lot of stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. Imagine you have a class that is using a lot of stuff. Then you can say almost sure that this class is breaking the single responsibility principle. So imagine a class that is using some WPF things and it's using also some database things and maybe some threading things, etc. If you are observing a class like this kind of big fat class that is using a lot of things, then you can see that the single responsibility principle that just state actually that a class should have just one reason to change or that just state that a class have just one concern. You can see that it's broken. And actually in most of code base, I see there is a lot of such classes, and these classes, they can be spotted with line of code or complexity, but efferent coupling is another good way to spot this multi-concern class. And concerning afferent coupling, I mean the Gaia, the number of Gaia that use me. Imagine that you have a class that is pretty popular, that is pretty used inside your code base. What mm-hmm. does it mean? It means that if this class is changing, it will probably broke a lot of other things. So a high afferent coupling on a class is I think it's a bad thing too. And here there is a trick. The trick is to transform your class inside you transform your implementation to an abstraction. Okay, if you have a high efferent coupling and in a code base, you cannot avoid it. There will be some type that will be very popular because code bases mm-hmm. are made like that. But I think it's a good thing that this type will be implementation. Even if you just do one interface for one class, it's a good thing because at least you can agree on a contract. You can define your interface as a contract. And at least you can agree with all these users that that you use this interface this way. Maybe if the implementation evolves, it won't be seen by by user. So that's two usage of this metric that are pretty interesting. And finally, another usage of afferent coupling. It's interesting because if you have zero, it means that your class is not used at all. And this is not always true because, of course, you can use it with reflection. You can use it with polymorphism or things like that. But statically, you can see if a class is not used. And in NDPEN, we are using this trick to pinpoint statically dead code. That's another interesting usage of afferent coupling.
Okay. So afferent coupling, the incoming usage, and you're saying that having a lot of people rely on me puts a lot of pressure on me as a class. It also tells me whether or not I'm going to be a problem if I change. So I like that afferent coupling is a good signal that you should be thinking about interfaces if you haven't already been.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Very cool.
Yeah, I just wanted to, there is another little border of this metric, which is the ranking metric inspired from the Google ranking page algorithm. And in NDPEN, we implemented this metric on both type and method, or maybe better said on the graph of type and the graph of method. And so now we can see with this metric which one is very important inside your code base. So just as an example, if we apply this metric on the .NET framework, immediately the top 10 type will be object, integer, string, boolean, etc. All these primitive types that are extremely important and are actually used everywhere. But now if we translate this metric on another code base, it's very interesting because if you don't know a code base, if you're just a beginner of a code base, you just arrived, then you can see what's really important, what's really matter inside the code base. And then you can begin to study this thing and see how they are related to components, et cetera. And this is also a good metric to use to discover a code base.
Well, this is one of the things that I think is exciting about software metrics. It seems obvious to you, I think, because you work in this stuff every day. But the idea that you could come upon a metric, which is really just an equation, and you could say, oh, well, this would be fun. Let's see how we can apply this to code. So the idea that you took Google PageRank as a popularity and applied it to code is a way I wouldn't have thought, a thing I wouldn't have thought of.
Yeah, this gives pretty interesting. I'm not sure I'm the first one that did that, but that gives pretty interesting results.
Well, certainly no one's the first one to do anything anymore.
No, I know that Thierry Dehalleux, like now, which is now at Microsoft Research on PEX. I know he did this metric, I think, a bit before me. He did this metric inside .NET Reflector, I think, but still.
Ah, yeah. One of the metrics that stood out that I thought was fun was this metric called CRAP, the CRAP metric, which stands for Change Risk Analyzer and Predictor. It's a Java metric that, basically tells you if your code is crap, right?
Yeah, the problem, so here we have some other metrics, like that actually they are metric composition. So now, so far, we just talk about basic metrics that can be really inferred immediately from the code base. And the idea here is to put some equation and to compose this metric. So for example, the crap is the cyclomatic complexity squared, multiplied by one minus the coverage, etc., etc. So you have a big formula, and at the end, an expert say you that the value given by this formula, in this range, it will be very bad, in this range, it will be acceptable, etc. So you can use metric, you can compose metric. There is another example of metric composition in Visual Studio. You have the maintainability index, okay, which is a mix of the Halstead volumetric metric and cyclomatic complexity, line of code, etc. And the idea is that here you get a number without dimension, okay? When you say line of code, the dimension here is one line of code, right? Or when you say afferent coupling, the dimension is the number of users, okay? But here you get a metric without dimension that is supposed to give you a results about what's really bad. And my opinion, I don't really believe in this metric because I've never seen a killer composed metric. Because it's very easy to fake this metric with a false positive and a counter example than be sure that it doesn't work all the time. I think that the definition of a software metric has to stay pretty understandable for everybody. And the minimal requirement is that you can understand the dimension of the metric.
Well, the thing that I like about this metric and why I think the CRAP metric is fun and not just fun, but useful, is that in this instance where we're composing a metric about complexity, we're composing a metric using cyclomatic complexity and composing it with coverage, we're basically saying that this is complex, but I'm protected by these tests.
I think you can have a more linear way to compose metrics. So, for example, the approach we are taking in NDPEN is that you can just define some rule and you can ask, for example, for complex method that are not covered because you can define some kind of what we call SQL query. So basically we are querying the code as you would query a database. Okay. Mm-hmm. And maybe you can really ask a select method where the complexity is higher than maybe 10 and the percentage coverage is lower maybe than 10%.
And you get the effectively the same thing is what you're saying.
Exactly. But it's more linear and at least it remains understandable. And if you have a false positive, it will be very easy to understand why here you have a problem. But usually by composing linearly the metric, you can understand the result, which is really the most important thing.
Yeah, that's a good point. The CRAAP metric is interesting because it squares the complexity number and then it cubes the code coverage number. So it's putting more weight on one aspect of the metric than another. As with all of these things, they have a reason for it. But I think your point is well taken. You can't really easily look at the value and say, here's what I need to do to pass this metric.
Mm-hmm.
Another composed metric that you use is this VS maintainability index. Mm-hmm. This is something that the FX Cop team uses. It's an index that's more linear, but it's not a percentage, right? It's not 1 to 100, is it? I don't quite understand the number.
Because that's exactly the point I was making. You don't get the number because there is no dimension in that number because it's a mix between several metrics like complexity, line of code, etc. And so you cannot put a dimension. And if you don't understand, Microsoft just tell you that you will have a number between 0 and 100. But and maybe if it's up to 20, it will be good. But you just forced to listen to them because if you're not an expert, you cannot understand the dimension of this metric, and you cannot do proper choice by your own. So this is the whole problem with the composing non-linearly metrics, I think.
Yeah, I agree. It's very confusing. Now I've been playing with .NET 4.0, and I know that you have too, and you've been looking at. I think you called them evolutionary metrics or metrics around how things change. So being able to compare multiple builds. And you had a blog post a couple of days ago where you were looking at .NET 3.5 and .NET 4 and seeing what was changed and what was added to the .NET framework.
Yeah, I think that the evolution, the changes inside the code base is extremely important. And whether you are using the framework, like the .NET framework and want to see what's evolving or whether you are just seeing the evolution on your own code, I think it's very important because think about it. When you release some code, when the code is in production, okay, usually you don't have bugs or you have a few bugs when the code is in production or at least this is the goal you want to achieve, right? So between the release N-1 and the next release number N, okay, all the difference between the two snapshots of code base can contain potential bugs that have not been in production yet. So I think that focusing onto the delta between two releases is extremely important. And in my opinion, very few development teams are using this powerful feature, which can be used actually in NDPEN. You can couple this feature with, for example, quality metrics. So, for example, you can write some rule and just ask for, tell me about method that have been added or maybe refactored, okay, the way the code was changed, right? Mm-hmm. And I want to know about this method, and I want to make sure that all these methods have maybe 90% coverage by test or even 100%. So, or maybe you can require that this method are maybe like a complexity lower than 10. So what is really cool here is that everybody is dealing with legacy. Suppose now you are dealing with a very huge code base.
Right.
You can say, from now, all the refactored method, all the added method, I want them to respect a minimum quality. This is, from my perspective, this is the best feature of the product, to allow you to focus onto the changes. And to some rules to make the quality better on the changes because now we know that the code gets refactored And we know that in 1 year, in 2 years, in 3 years, a legacy code base will be more or less transformed totally. So if you focus on delta after delta, on the quality, whether you are talking about coverage or cyclomatic complexity, etc., if you focus on quality just on the delta, you don't need to say like, from now we're going to stop everything for 3 months and refactor everything to a bad quality metric. Here, the interesting thing is that just the delta we are producing now since the last release, we want to focus the quality on this one. And if you apply this very simple principle, maybe in 1 year, in 2 years, in X year, you will get a good code base.
All right. I agree. I think that over time, being able to set a bar and make sure that you don't regress, that you don't go back in time to a time that was the quality of your code was lesser, I think is very important. So the product that you're selling is called Ndepend, and people can see that at ndepend.com. And you blog about software metrics at codebetter.com, and people can find your blog up there. And I'll put links to all of this in the show notes. I really appreciate you taking the time to come and chat with me on the show today, Patrick.
Okay, you're welcome, Scott. I appreciate you too.
All right. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'll see you again next week.